Welcome to The Precinct and the Practice, where the conversation is free, but this talk ain't cheap. Broadcasting from a studio in the North CTE Law and Public Safety Center and streaming on NPS Voices, I'm your host, Miss Alexis Love. Consider this your first warning. We're going in. All right, welcome back to episode 7 of the Precinct and the Practice. Today, up to this point, it's taken us through the streets of Minneapolis and into the halls of county leadership, but today we're stepping up to the federal tier. We're exploring what it means to protect the systems of justice at the highest level and how the discipline of military service translates into safeguarding our federal courts. Our guest today is uniquely wired for this conversation. He's a 21-year United States Air Force veteran, a security forces and deputy DASM for the United States Attorney's Office, an entrepreneur, and a talented solo jazz musician. He has a famous badge-wearing service dog named Zeus, who is not here today. I certainly am disappointed about that. However, I will give you a pass because he'll be back. Johnny Holiday, welcome to the North Side. Johnny, you've spent over, well, welcome, first
Thank
of all.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate
and
it.
And I'm introducing Muhammad. He's my co-host today.
Muhammad.
Okay. And so you've spent over 2 decades in Air Force Security Forces, where you were trained to defend high-value military assets worldwide. When you transitioned into civilian life, what was the biggest culture shock that you experienced?
I would say the mindset. The mindset that we had in the military compared to what a lot of civilians don't understand. And I'm not talking about the law enforcement guys or agency guys. I'm talking about just civilians and status, you know. So the mindset is a big deal to me. It's what do you need? What do you want? And then I'll get it done mindset. Whereas I see in some cases, they don't understand. Sometimes you're just going to do a job you don't really care to do, but that's part of the business. So instead of focusing on how much I don't care to do this job, how about we focus on what can I do to make your job easier to the boss? And because of that mindset, it's helped carry me through all kinds of stuff. You know, I learned that type of mindset when I used to roughneck on the oil rigs back in the day offshore. And I used to, when I was in the military, again, the second time, I had to develop a mindset. Things need to get done. Mm-hmm. And you don't babysit me. You just tell me what you want, how you want, and when you want it, and then get out of the way. And if I need you, I'll call you. You know, so I've carried that through many years, whether I was deployed or doing missions or doing training operations with other, special people and doing things. It's carried me along the way, and which made me more dependable. Mm-hmm. So they know that, you know, if they call me, they're not going to be questioned, why do I have to do this? Why doesn't so-and-so do this? So that's the status that I've developed. And it was hard for me to see why people aren't like that all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, different backgrounds.
Yeah, that's cool. So, that makes you really good at being a family man.
Oh, yeah. I can't say I'm a perfect dad, that's for sure. But, you know, hey, that's why we got God's grace.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, so as we know, in the Air Force, like, you're trained to be, like, ruthless, I would say. And
trained to be what?
Ruthless, would you say?
No. And security forces, we're not trained to be ruthless. We're not trained to not care for life. We are definitely defenders. But in those type of missions, like if you're deployed and an incident happens, we're there to defend whoever's on the installation and the resources. And, We will defend and stop the threat, but we don't press forward to go looking for specific targets and just kill them.
I see. Okay, so that training obviously makes you aware, and it has you, like, always looking out for your safety. How has that training been helpful to you as a civilian?
Well, you know, having that kind of mindset of situationally aware, which I'm a big fan of, everybody should be paying attention and it's helped me because when I'm out and about doing things, whether I'm with my family or Zeus or friends, there's been incidences that have happened where I got out of the situation before it started, which didn't have to mitigate it physically. There was an incident once I was walking with a person that worked at the agency with me, and she was on the phone the whole time from the moment we walked out of the building to the garage. We just happened to park at the same location, and there was this big old huge guy that just said, "I'm gonna blankety blank kill you," and she had no idea that this person was talking that way. And I grabbed. She was so wrapped up with her phone, and I tell people, you're not that important to where you can just throw your life away like that. The job is not that important. You're not doing missions and combat missions and stuff. It's the environment, and the environment that I work in now is nothing like it was for me in combat. So, you know, I had to grab her arm and force her to get inside. She thought I was like trying to hurry up and get to the car and go home. No, I was preventing that guy from jumping on us, and which the guy was clearly out of his mind and wandered off. It would have been a bad day, you know. But again, so those situational awareness techniques, you know, utilizing the threat triangle format and all this other stuff that I've learned has helped save me and my family and others from being in bad situations.
So good. And then I have.
That's really good.
That was, he went very into detail. And then I have one more question for you, and that is, what is the hardest military instinct that you had to drop when you moved, like, to a civilian or into the civilian world, I would say? And then what is one instinct that you still have that you kept?
The hardest thing I had to deal with transitioning from military to civilian is the fact that it's not the same type of people I worked with as a team, if that makes sense. I mean, the guys that I work with now, you know, my direct boss and my supervisor and some of the guys that I work with are just amazing people, you know. But a lot of times I see and struggle with the fact is like, why is it so difficult for you to do this job when you're just asked to help out and you complain about it? That's the hardest part. Because in my career field with me, I'm not going to sit here and complain to my boss, like, why I have to go do that? Why I can't stand that. You are here to serve. And if your boss needs you, go do it. I mean, as long as it doesn't cross your moral boundaries or integrity, I don't see what the problem is. You're there for 8 hours anyways, you know? So, to your second question, there's things that I've kept. Work ethic. I'm huge about my testimony, my integrity and moral value being questioned. I'll never tolerate anyone trying to talk down to me. I don't care what your rank is or who you are. If you think you're that special, you know, I don't tolerate that. So that's the mindset I had as a military member. Like, you have no business talking to me like a kid. Talk to me like a grown man or a grown woman, and professionally.
That's good.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of young people are trying to develop the language to stand up for themselves in that way right now. Mm-hmm. And that's a good way to, the way you just said it, that's what they need to develop. But they also need to, even though they want to command that respect, they have to give that same respect back. And
yes.
I like that. So thank you for sharing that.
I mean, there's people that work at the agency. You'll have them everywhere. It doesn't matter where you work or even as a musician. You know, the thing is, you can be direct, but be professional. Like, if some of the people there, they never say hi to me in the morning, I really don't care. But if you say good morning, even though I don't really care for you, I'll have the respect to say, hey, good morning, and keep moving on with life, pressing forward.
That's good. Right. Well, how do the protocols for defending high-value assets on a military base differ from the strategies used to, like, neutralize any domestic threats and protect people today?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people have to understand is ComSec. You know, you have to make sure that information's not let out that people do not have a need to know. Another thing is communication. Communication is a huge key. It'll break a mission. It'll definitely break a mission if you lack comm, as we call it in the military. So, you know, there has to be a baseline of things that everyone should across the board, whether military or civilian, and establish those really confidently and solid. Then there's little tweaks that the military does in comparison to other agencies or stuff like that. And just understand that it's two entities, different entities working together. when they're all establishing their own world of how we run things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we can keep the communication barrier up and the ego barriers down, it'll be a great day.
Right.
Yeah.
So then under the law, the federal courts must be accessible to everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
But from a security point of view, allowing any random individual to enter the facility where they're prosecuting dangerous criminals or something seems like a disaster. So how do you reconcile the need to keep doors open with keeping the whole place under lock and key at the same time?
Well, we have what's called CSO individuals. They're court security officers. So they're the first line of defense.
Okay.
And they can determine if this person needs to be in a building or not. If there's some cases that we've had, some people that were not all there mentally or under the influence and stuff, they have the right to detain them and stop them, prevent them from coming in. And then another agency will come over and take over those individuals and question them and stuff like that. Another thing is that, you know, we have secured locations. So even with my background and my clearance, I can't just go straight to the judge's quarters either.
Right.
I don't have access to that because there's not a need for me to do that. You know, there are agency guys there that do have that access, but that's because that's their job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's different levels of defense that we consider when it comes to, you know, doing these type of things on a day-to-day basis. And when everybody knows their job and does it appropriately and professionally, but yet it's still approachable,
mm-hmm.
things run a lot smoother.
Yeah.
And, you know, being observant, I mean, you know, I make it clear to them there's certain things that I do every time I come through security. And if something's off, it triggers them to be like, oh, something's not right. Mm-hmm. And then they can get involved. Does that make sense?
It does.
So I watch people on a day-to-day basis, even at the office, and I'm walking around. People think I'm walking around, say hi. Well, yeah, I say hi like the first time, but I'm monitoring people just to make sure they're okay because they're under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I can get them like, hey, let's go get a cup of coffee. That's part of keeping secure, the area secure, by helping them decompress because they're stressed a lot. They have a lot of work to do there. So, you know, that's one of the ways that we do when it comes to securing an open door type of policy.
That makes sense. I didn't realize that was what I was doing. I wasn't consciously doing it when I did security at Midtown. I was always doing that. That was just my way of being in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm naturally like that. And mm-hmm. But I didn't even realize, like, sometimes people in certain jobs have to do that. Mm-hmm. And the unique way you choose to do it, I think it speaks volumes.
Well, I think there's so many different tactical ways, they call it, you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to be diverse enough to understand, like, when I get people that come to the sixth floor of where I work and they're irate, okay, I have two options. I can either make you leave or I can be professional and de-escalate it. And hopefully if I can help you, great. If not, convince you to leave and that you're leaving on your terms.
Yes.
When really it's my terms.
Really,
you like, know,
take the small W with the big W.
Yeah, and it gives them, it still maintains dignity for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not feeling like they're talking down to. And that's the thing with the younger generations, they don't know how to communicate what they're thinking or what they feel. And it's so necessary to do that to be successful in life. If I tell my wife, hey, I want to do this with a music career, if I can't explain it to her effectively, then she's not going to be able to help me with some ideas. So it works all the way around. Now, do I get it all the time? Nah, I miss the boat every once in a while. That's just life.
It is. I like that. I have one more? Yes. Law enforcement's often portrayed as stoic, quiet, but you've mastered the art of using communication and storytelling. So how does being vocal and animated actually help de-escalate the situation?
Well, it's presentation.
Hmm.
Everything is presentation. You know, I hear a lot of talk about how people are angry at the law enforcement and all these agencies. Well, first of all, they really don't know what they do. They haven't been through the things, and nobody's perfect. Because I can tell you, I know some pastors and churches that need to step down. Okay, but the fact is, it's on a case-by-case basis. Like, if I get pulled over by law enforcement, well, guess what? I'm the idiot that was speeding.
Mm-hmm.
So I comply to everything that they ask me to. If I got a problem, okay, well, we'll go to court and deal with it. But, you know, I think law enforcement today are really trying their hardest to build relationships with the local community, and it's the attitude of the community that won't allow them sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in my eyes, I'm like, well, you have nothing to say, so just shut up. That's just how it is. Okay, they're trying. How many times have you messed up with people in relationships? You know, it's called grace. We have to have grace for each other. I'm not talking about not holding them responsible. I'm all about being accountable. Absolutely. Everybody, and that includes the mom mm-hmm. of a household. Right. Everybody needs to be accountable. But if nobody can submit under authority, you become unteachable. And if you're unteachable, you have no use to this planet.
You're right.
You know? So when people see law enforcement, all I ask, hey, why don't you ask them, how are you doing today? You need anything? That's it. Mm-hmm. You don't need to tell your life story. Just tell them, hey, you okay? And if you did something wrong, man up and suck it up. Take the responsibility for it. I will never, ever, 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 ever give any law enforcement an attitude because of my stupidity. When I got pulled over, I was like, hey, sir, you know, you do you, man. You know, and I'm not being rude. I'm just getting my insurance ready for you. What else do you need?
And they appreciate that because yeah. a lot of times they're just going to let you go. Like, you know you was speeding, right? You know you was speeding. Well, when you know you was 20 over the speed limit. So, yeah. I could give you a ticket.
You could take me to jail after that one. You know. And the funniest thing is they're like, you know why I pulled you over? And I never admit to it, but yes. I always say, I have an idea. You know? And
that's
I do.
Smart. That's
you know?
Smart.
But it makes them laugh. And then sometimes, like, when I get pulled over, I'm not saying I get pulled over all
yes
the time.
Yes, you are. You
but
snitching.
I'm just saying, y'all people drive too slow in Minnesota. I'm sorry. Y'all need to get out the way, okay? But anyways, I got pulled over, and this police officer, state trooper, pulled me over. He said, any reason why you're driving so fast? I said, yes, sir. He's like, what's the reason? I said, because y'all drive too slow. And he's like, he started laughing because I try to break the ice,
yes.
you know? When I, even in daylight, when people, if I ever get pulled over, I drop all my windows. And if it's nighttime, I drop all my windows. I don't care how cold it is. I turn interior light on. Because you need to know you are safe with me.
That's good.
I don't know where you just came from, a domestic or some idiot that decides to act stupid and don't want to take responsibility for it. I'm here to calm your world down, even through my stupid actions, you know?
Okay.
So he was like, where are you from? I said, I'm from San Antonio, Texas. He goes, well, this ain't Texas. I said, Roger, that clearly is not, you know. But he was laughing, and he was saying, how are you doing? You doing okay? I was like, man, you wish you were like my position. You'd want my autograph if you knew anything about me. And, you know, so we broke the ice. And I'm a firearms instructor and medical instructor, and I carry from time to time. And I'll volunteer that information. Hey, sir, mm-hmm. I wanted you to know, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so you know you're safe with me. That's it. It's, you know, you don't need to get an attitude. It's just, that's just selfish. That's what it is.
It is. And you're thinking about them, and I know they appreciate it. They're probably like, this is the best guy I pulled over all night. I wish everybody acted like
that. I was coming from Iowa, and I was speeding. I was, my wife and I were trying to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And the law enforcement, I did my windows. It was 11:30 at night and dropped in interior lights and He of course, he saw my tactical gear in the back, you know. But so he was asking me questions, you know, where are you coming from? Where are you going? Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, hey, you know, he goes, I clocked you at this. I said, you know what, sir? You do you. I should get my insurance for you. If you need anything else, you let me know. He's like, okay. And he goes to his car and comes right back. He goes, I wrote you a ticket, but I wrote it for the cheapest ticket I could give you. He goes, you got to be the nicest guy I've ever dealt with. I go, hey, man, you're doing your job. And if people don't like it, then tell them to stop being dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. I don't understand. If you don't want to be affiliated with cops or law enforcement anytime, mm-hmm. why are you doing things that are stupid to get their attention? That's just dumb.
Right.
But I'm from Texas. What do I know? You know, I'm just saying.
I mean, that'll work here. That'll work here. Go ahead.
All right. So we know deployment can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And my question for you is, what specific moment during deployment had the biggest impact on your life?
Well, my deployments was combat environment. The biggest personal thing that affected me is being away from my family. But thank God I have a wife that is strong, knew how to take care of the household, loves the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
If I died, the woman's rich. It don't matter. And she's great with money. She's great about taking care of the kids. So I have nothing to lose.
Okay.
But the thing is, when I volunteered for a position called V-Bid Alley when I was deployed to Iraq, it's probably the number one of the number one spots where if a threat was coming with a vehicle-borne explosive, an IED, mm-hmm. you know, that was going to hit our gate. Mm. It would hit us. We wouldn't know it until it was too late. Mm-hmm. And when I stepped off the transport, the bus, I was like, what was I thinking volunteering for this spot? I mean, that's just got to be stupid. I got a family, you know? But then I remember it clearly. I felt like the Lord was telling me, hey, your job's not done yet. And I was like, okay, but it didn't mean I got stupid and put myself in positions where I get shot at or, you know, whatever. You know, it just means that I had nothing to fear. And I did my job, and I enjoyed it. It was okay. Great.
That's awesome. Well, we were just asking you questions about the federal shield and the military courts. We're going to transition into this, the sound and the business. Go ahead.
All right. So how did you manage to balance the tactical mindset of an Air Force security forces defender with the creative mindset of a fluid jazz musician?
Okay, so I'm a firm believer that arts open a part of the mind that nothing else can. Yes. I've seen it, I've witnessed it, I've experienced it. So I was a musician long before I was into this tactical world or into the security world and all this other stuff. So I came to a point in my life where I was going to give up music. I was so tired of dealing with people and their attitudes and, you know, just dealing with it on the financial side. And it was just not worth it for me. And then I was deployed to a location, and I met this amazing guy. Turns out to be my mentor in life. And he was special operations guy, but he was like the second highest ranking individual on base, enlisted. So he's what you call a command chief mass sergeant.
Okay.
And so the only person he answered to was the base commander. That's it. Nobody else. He'd answer nobody else. And him, when I first met him, I was actually in the middle of a talent show right before I was going on duty. So I had my gun on me, and I'm performing, and I'm playing this music. And he walked in just right off the plane, practically just came straight into the talent show, and I happened to be playing. Mm-hmm. And so I go to the chow hall that night. His name is, at that time I used to call him Chief Klukas, but his name is Marty Klukas, Martin Klukas. And this big old dude walks up on me, and I'm like, am I going to have to shoot this guy? Like, he's walking up with, like, straight-up authority, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And my guy, my supervisor on the road on patrol was there, and he was watching, and he's a big, burly dude. He's like, and that guy talked to me, and my supervisor goes, what was that all about? What'd you do?
Right.
Why you got to think automatically I did something wrong?
Because you look guilty.
I like the attention. It's all good. And basically, I said, I don't know. I go, he goes, who's that guy? I said, I don't know. He got a bunch of rank on him. That's all I know. He goes, what do you want? I said, he asked me to come by his office as soon as I get a chance in the morning. He's like, oh.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I'm taking my time on this one, you know. And so I go to his office, and it turns out he is such a huge supporter of what I did musically that he literally had me performing all over the location and embassies. Where I was stationed at my first deployment.
That's so cool.
It was so much, and I worked mid, so not many people saw me. But in the daytime, they all saw me, and they thought I was a USO performer until they saw me walking with my guns. They're like, since when they give USO performers guns? I'm like, you dumb. I'm security forces, man. What are you talking about? They're like, what? You know, they couldn't believe, but because he had me practically torn. I got to a point where I was like, sir, you know, there's other people that got skills and talents. You can use them if you want, you know? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I know, but I'm going to use you. I was like, okay, roger that, you know? So at the end of the deployment, I had a conversation and said, look, man, I really want to go for pararescue. It's a special operations group in the Air Force. I said, and he goes, yeah, I see you training. He says, I see you doing your thing and stuff. And he said, you know, I'm sure you'll be fine. He said, but personally, I would not quit the music because that music is going to take you way further than pararescue could ever take you. And sure enough, it did. I got some other opportunities to go to get it out my system.
Mm-hmm.
But I went way further than in things that I never expected to do. Whether it was joint training or missions with specialty guys or, you know, different stuff. And the music was a great balance, mm-hmm. because it also impacted people that were stressing in the deployed locations and family issues. But the music took them out of that world for a little while, gave them rest. And that's when I noticed, I was like, yeah, I need to keep this going.
Wow.
Not to mention that the units knew that it brought them great attention. So, you know.
That's so cool.
So, it worked both ways.
I love this. So is that what inspired you? To build your career as like a one-man band, and how'd you manage to like balance playing the trumpet, the saxophone, handling vocals, and all in a single live event?
Well, you know, in security forces, they train us to be independent. Don't rely on anybody per se, right? I mean, clearly you have to when you're doing missions or whatever. But I didn't want to deal with drama. And you get drama when you start bringing a bunch of people into the mix. I could be the founder of the band, but if there's a vocalist that's better than I am, which I don't have no problem with, you want to start taking over. See, well, that's where you can get your feelings hurt. Mm-hmm. That's where you need to go in. And, you know, they're so undependable in so many ways. So I knew I was always on time. Mm-hmm. The backing tracks that I used never screwed up, and they played when I needed them to play, you know, and I became so self-sufficient. Now, I did have opportunities where bands backed me up, and it was great to interact with humans, you know, other musicians, but I didn't want to deal with the drama. So there's another gentleman that plays with me. His name is Willie Moore, phenomenal sax player. Mm-hmm. Love this guy. And you know what? He knew my standards from the get-go. No alcohol before or during the show. I will fire you right there on the spot, and I'm not paying you. People are hiring me to be professional, and if you're with me, you're me. You know, and then we grew into this amazing duo together. Mm-hmm. And we are still our own people, but we collaborate so well. And you've seen us before, how we collaborate. It's not about, hey, look what I can do on a horn. Look what I can do on a horn. It's about, let's minister to the hearts.
Yeah.
That's what, because any monkey can freaking play anything technically. It don't take a rocket scientist.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't. If you got a great instructor, you'll be fine. But, you know, it's just... We just work so good together. And that's how I came up with the idea of working solo and stuff like that.
That makes a lot of sense. That's pretty good. I like that. So when you're booked for local Minneapolis venues, what kind of setup is essential to make your solo performance sound like a fully realized live jazz band?
I bring my own equipment.
Everything?
Every time. Literally almost every time. Mm. I don't rely on... I do have to rely on some audio engineers when I hook it to their bigger system, but I make it clear what I want.
Okay.
Because I'm the artist, I'm the performer, I know what I want. If I don't know what I want, then I ask the engineer, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Now, I make it clear to him, look, you're in charge of the main speakers to the audience. I don't care what you do. That's you. That's your job. I just want to make sure on the floor we have what we need. That's all.
Okay.
And then I'll take care of the rest. And you can just sit back and enjoy the ride. Nice. And when they realize how easy I am, and it's so much easier, like when you tell, if I came up to you and said, hey, this is what I need, this is what I need, this is what I need. Well, that's less figuring out you got to have to do. And then, you know, they may make recommendations. I'm like, yeah, that's a better idea. We'll do it your way. You know, I'm not here to babysit you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're much better than I am, then I'll shut up and listen. You make me sound good, you know? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, work as a team.
I like
you know?
That.
But I bring my own equipment.
Okay.
Usually.
All right, self-sufficient man.
Come on.
You frequently perform for veterans, such as your concerts at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis. So talk about why that seems so deeply personal for you.
Well, playing for veterans is because there's an automatic connection, even if I don't know you. Veterans have learned to appreciate, all in all, more with less. Mm. You know, you have these artists today, which I know a lot of it's immaturity, but how many artists today that will be willing to go help set up an audio rig with the roadies and do a performance and then help tear it down? Yeah. And I attest that to one specific band that I did a world tour with, Tops and Blue. It was a show band in the Air Force. We traveled the world playing for all kinds of people and events. And, you know, we would set up 28,000 pounds of equipment stateside, 22,000 pounds of equipment European tour. Perform, then tear down, and then ate, and went home and slept for 4 hours and got on the road. How many artists are willing to do that?
I don't know any. Mm-mm.
They're not. The artists only ones I can tell you that are not famous are drummers.
Yeah.
Drummers are willing to do that, and maybe some lead guitar players and keyboards maybe. But nobody will do that. If you go ask some famous artist, like, you know what, you're going to do a show today? I'll tell you what, before you do your rehearsal stuff, why don't you help us set up the equipment? Then we rehearse, get an audio check, a sound check,
and then
when we're done, we'll tear it down and help us pack it in a truck, and then you go to your fancy hotel.
They're too Hollywood for that.
Yep. And that's why I don't have a lot of respect for the artist. Now, there's things I can't do to help you, but I'm there if you need me. Wow. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I like to get there super early because in technology, things go wrong. I like to be prepared before you even come into the room to hear music. It's very rarely that I'll set up while you're sitting there. I think it's just unprofessional. But sometimes time doesn't permit.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, wow. That was great. So as we know, people use music to like express their feelings mm-hmm. and how they feel. What songs do you use to like cope with negative thoughts or feelings or let's say like trauma?
Trauma, I don't really think I have anything that's happened to me so traumatic because of my upbringing and where I lived and where I was raised. It's all based on my mood. I mean, I say jazz and all this other stuff, but I don't like listening to one particular style all the time. So whatever mood I'm in is decided upon what music I'm going to play or listen to at that moment.
Okay.
I don't limit myself to like, oh, I'm only going to listen to smooth jazz, whatever.
Right.
What's one of your favorites then?
Yeah, it is. They're all like kind of my favorite, but it's what's needed at the moment. Okay. That's how I view it.
Yeah. Okay. And then another question is, what inspired you to transition your 21 years of military police experience into funding your own firearms like training company?
There was a close friend of mine that gave a class to my son and his friends. And the guy's great. I mean, he's definitely knowledgeable. But the presentation, I was like, oh no. No. We need to do way better than this. I'm not here to tell you war stories. I'm here to get you educated.
Oh, he was a big storyteller all the time.
Oh, yeah. And he's got some funny stories. He's just nuts. I love him. In fact, that's his call sign, Nuts. Yeah. So and I love this brother today. He's a guy I would definitely put my life in his hands, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody's got their own method, their own teaching skills, mm-hmm. you know. And that's respectful. And I love the fact that... Oh, yeah, you got your own.
No, she definitely does.
So, you know, I saw that, and it triggered a response on my behalf. Let me try this business. And then, boom, it just exploded. Yeah. So...
Okay, and then the last question to wrap up for today is, what type of education helps a North High student achieve the role you have today?
Oh... I will tell you this. I've been told in my life I'll never be a good enough musician to make money off of. I've been told in my life that, you know, you won't be able to do this because of this, blah, 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 blah. And the response I have is, I never asked. So what's your point?
Right. The haters be hating, don't mm-hmm. they?
Or the doubters.
Yeah.
There's doubters too, you know. Sometimes parents screw that up, but get over yourself. We're human. If you're gonna do it, just go do it. Mm-hmm. Educate yourself to the highest possible. I remember my son wanted to be a UFC fighter. I said, well, then you're gonna train properly. I'll pay for it, but you're gonna train properly. You're not gonna go all ghetto in the backyards and do this stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right. Yeah.
You're gonna do it right. So whatever it is that you want to do in life, if you can picture yourself doing it, all you're lacking is the educational part of it and the creativity, and that can be developed. You just got to be willing to tolerate your mistakes, adjust like we say in the military, adjust fire, adjust your position, and then get back in the fight and do what you're designed to do.
I love it.
I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was great.
All right, we're going to transition one last time to the lightning round. Okay.
Okay.
So you have either 5 seconds to answer or five words or less, okay?
You know I can't speak no five words or less. Just write right now.
Oh, then I'm okay. Just going to be like...
Okay, gotcha.
Like, this is supposed to go really quick.
Okay.
So, and I think you'll do well. So your musical choice, trumpet or saxophone, if you could only play one for the rest of your life?
Trumpet. Mm. And it's in the Bible, too.
Okay.
Just saying.
The saxophone ain't in there.
I told Willie, I go, you might want to convert before. Just saying.
Okay.
Trumpet, absolutely. Got and you know why? Because when I play, everybody has to listen.
You're right.
Yeah.
I love it.
What is Zeus? How do you say
Zeus.
Your dog?
Zeus.
Zeus. What is Zeus's favorite command to execute?
Zeus just really enjoys being around me. I took him for a run yesterday. I did not run. I was on a bicycle, okay? I ain't trying to be that guy no more, right? So we were running, and I gave him a command to just stop and drop. And I was on a bike, and I kept going. And I was like, let's go. And he zipped right up to me.
He loves that let's go.
Yeah, he loves that let's go. I mean, he knew I was coming somewhere today. And he knew I wanted to bring him, but I can't because I got to go straight to the office. And you could look at him like,
you give me the let's go.
Come on, I'm ready.
Give me the...
Or if I go in the other room and I shake his collar dealing, and then I look like this, he's right there looking at me like that. And he got that stone cold look that looks right through your soul. He's like, what's up? We going? Let's go. You know? And he'll wake me up too in the morning, like he's got to go to the bathroom. And he'll just come and just nudge my face like that once and then sit at the doorway.
This is Zeus.
Yeah, there's Zeus right there.
Oh, wow. That's
140 pounds of love.
Wow.
He's a big boy.
He's great.
You thought my dog was big. He's 40. He got 40 pounds on my dog.
Yeah, please don't be around me.
I tell you what.
You'd love him.
I tell people, like, run.
Yeah. I would, too.
Yeah,
I would, too.
All right, so the Costco run. What is Zeus's go-to purchase or treat when he's on the clock at Costco?
A hug. I give him a hug, and I give him a lot of praise. I don't give him treats, per se. Because he doesn't become dependent. Like, okay, if I do this, I don't make a treat. Nah, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And he loves the cooler.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we're hot, he'll go right in the cooler. And I don't even tell him anything. He'll just like...
He'll just lay down.
His chin's like this. And people... And you see him breathing out steam. And people will walk by and be like, can I have it? No, don't touch him right now.
Just let him be.
Yeah, just let him be. Just admire him from a distance.
I don't know if I told you this, but he has his own Costco badge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No way.
And it was their idea. I'm like, wait a minute. Why I got to pay for my stuff and he don't pay for nothing? You only just met him, you know?
They love
Yeah,
him.
He's got a little pin from the U.S. Marshals and all the agencies and stuff. Patches.
Wow. That's cool. Okay. And then we have Miles Davis or John Coltrane.
Coltrane.
That's how you say it.
Neither.
Neither. Okay.
Phil Driscoll.
Phil Driscoll.
Phil Driscoll was my inspiration to continue on with the trumpet. At 18, when I graduated high school, I was going to give up the trumpet because, I mean, I didn't know what you could do. And Phil Driscoll is an amazing musician and evangelist. He used to play for Joe Cocker, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and all these other guys. Oh, yeah. When I heard him, I was like, I didn't know you could play like that in church. You know, because that's where I grew up. I'm playing a lot in church in high school and stuff. And I was like, the man's got like 14 horns on the stage. Like, yeah, he's got the flugelhorn, the trumpet, the piccolo trumpet, this and that. I was like, I didn't know you could do that. And I'm thinking, why not? You know, but my mind was so limited in my thinking. So I have a lot of respect for those guys. But what they did was nothing new under the sun, as the Bible says. There's nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
They were just the first ones to expose it.
Okay.
But Phil Driscoll is the one where I learned that you want to minister to the hearts more than show you what I can do.
I like that. So, okay, so do you practice your scales or clean your gear first before a big week?
I'm at a point in my life, and I would say level, I really don't practice. I don't have time to practice because I'm either training Zeus or I'm doing stuff with the family or I'm training other people or I'm working late. I don't really have time to practice, but that's the benefit of having a solid technique of playing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to practice, but there's things I can do. when I don't have the trumpet with me, like buzz, I can do that kind of stuff and mm-hmm. keeps my chops square, but I don't practice very often.
Okay.
And the sax is just an easy horn to play, so I don't care.
It's easier than the trumpet?
Oh, yeah, by far.
Wow. I didn't know that.
But don't get me wrong. It's work, because you do have to develop your sound as a saxophonist. You do. Okay, because you're dealing with an instrument that everybody loves to play, uh-huh. that are saxophones. There are millions, there are like tons of them. So now you have to develop your sound to sound different as a saxophonist than you do the other saxophones. Trumpet, the embouchure automatically changes your sound.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So you have to work at it, mm-hmm. but it's not that hard.
Okay.
It's a definitely respectable instrument.
Okay. A packed local Minneapolis jazz club or a formal military ceremony? Which crowd has more energy?
Okay. Okay, well, let's change that question. Okay, you said local jazz club, right?
Yeah.
Or a military event, mm-hmm. not ceremony. Because ceremony,
they're very quiet, right?
Yeah, and I'll be like, you there? Hello? 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 You know, that we have to be. So let's talk about a military event, like a ball, a military ball.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll take the military ball.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're
because
live.
One, they like the fact that you're a brother in arms.
Okay.
Two, they relate to you that way. Uh-huh. And three, they're like, I didn't know we could do that.
Okay.
You know, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Okay.
And the camaraderie is like, when there's an Air Force band like we've done, like there's other military bands that play where we're at, I'm like, hey, what do you play? Oh, yeah, come and sit in with us. Come and sit in with us. Come and jam.
So you do have people come and sit.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, yeah, fun. Oh, yeah, you know. I said, it's not that hard because I'm playing it.
I want to go to one of those.
Military balls?
Yeah.
Okay, well, if I get invited to play again, I get an extra ticket, I'll get you.
Thank you.
That's where y'all get to dress all fancy and schmancy and all
I'm
that.
I'm good at
stuff.
That.
I'm just like, look, just give me my horn, let me eat, and then let's go home. No, I love the fellowship.
Okay, so the Air Force, what the uniform? The Air Force dress blues or a sharp tailored jazz suit?
Blues.
Okay.
Blues. Mm-hmm. There's more meaning mm-hmm. behind the blues in the uniform than I am worried about jazz tailor suit.
Okay.
Okay. What keeps you going during a long federal shift? Would you say a black coffee or just pure like adrenaline?
I stopped caring about my feelings. I stopped caring about working long. If a moment I start like, oh man. Yeah, I make comments like, oh man, it was a long day yesterday. But it's not because I'm like, I don't want to do that again. All the training that I did and the hardship that I went through in training, you just get to a point like either like, yeah, just get over yourself. There's people in way worse conditions than this.
So you're on pure adrenaline.
Hmm. It can be mm-hmm. sometimes. It depends what I'm doing. But that I know that adrenaline's got to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh. I'm like, Zeus, I'm riding a bike and you're running. You know?
Okay, so in your security style, if your security style had a theme song, would it be smooth jazz or a high tempo bebop? Or you could just name
funk.
What?
Yeah, it'd be funk. It'd be funk.
Come on,
because funk got that beat that just. Drives. It just drives. Bebop is okay. It's cool. Nah, you're too busy.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Smooth jazz? Oh, no.
It puts you to sleep. Right.
Have something to drink, a little stogie, and you be. That's where I'm thinking that. You know what I'm saying? Which I don't do. I'm just saying that that's the mindset that it gives me. You know?
Yeah.
So, it'd be funk because it's like, yeah, let's go do some missions and that.
Who's the funk artist?
Oh, man. It'd be different for me. It could be from. What was the name of that band? I forgot. Play that funk in you.
Oh yeah.
Or Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
Or you know, just something driven. Mm-hmm. You know, like some people like to hear, you know, heavy metal. Yeah. No, you got counseling. You need to attend. You know, I ain't doing that. Okay. I like to hear the words. I like to understand the words. You know.
I do too.
You know, I can. Hey, you know, to you, my son plays heavy metal. Hey, good on you, boy. You know,
you gotta get some therapy session.
Yeah, he needs Jesus in his life. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kidding. So, but he's also very talented to play other styles.
Oh yeah.
So when he would play with me, you know, mm-hmm. he was very diverse.
I see. Okay, and then last one, in what word, what does service mean to Jolly Holiday?
To serve is to be Christ-like.
Yeah.
Ultimate servant.
Yeah.
We as people have a tendency to be selfish, and I'm just as guilty as anybody else. I find myself from time to time being selfish, and I have to put myself in check. And sometimes I have people that I really, really keep close to me that will sometimes put me in check. And if you have to be teachable. You know, you have to realize, yeah, it's not about Johnny Holiday. You know, and it's always because I've always known what I want, when I want, and how I want it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it can come across very, very demanding. Whereas, no, I just like to cut the chase and let's go. You know, so, you know, it's that kind of thing. So I would say, even in my attitude or if I'm angry or something, I have to really focus on Christ.
That's good. I love it.
Even though I don't want to, because I want to say what I got to say, and I can't. You know?
You can't.
So.
Well, Johnny, thank you for showing us the true service requires both a shield to protect and a voice to inspire. Tell Zeus I miss him. Can't wait to see him. Bring him back. I am going to have you on again. We're going to do this.
Let me know.
And my other co-host will be here. It's the end of the school year, so we got a lot going on. But
no, I understand.
For the precinct and the practice, I'm Miss Alexis Love. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
If I can just say one thing.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to be successful in life, you have to fly around eagles, not chicken hawks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an eagle, then you have to fly with eagles, because they'll take you a higher place in the mentality than what other birds do. Keep that in mind.
Okay. The wise words of wisdom.
And that's because my wife told me that one. No, I'm just kidding.
I believe it. She surprised me.
He's starting to sound like my basketball coach now.
That's what's up. Closest.
Yeah, but if you saw me shoot ball, you'd be like, nah, stick with band. You're good.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.